Hello, welcome to the Transmedia podcast. Today we'd like to share with you the very interesting talk that Elaine Rayburn gave for Conductor Conference 2015. Here she talks about how to use transmedia storytelling to create learning experiences.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank Robert for inviting me to come speak to you this afternoon. And I warned him last night that I might fall asleep during my own presentation because I'm from Orlando, Florida, and I did get sleepy just before I was supposed to come talk to you. So anyway, thank you very much. I'm really impressed with the diversity of talent in the group, so I really hope I can deliver. So I'm a social scientist, and I'm from Sandia National Laboratories. I'm on assignment to the Office of the Secretary of Defense, where they look at training and education across all of the services in the United States, and we have a lot of NATO partnerships. So this actually tells you just a little bit more about me. I do a lot of research in future systems, so I spend a lot of my time thinking about the future, about future interactions, and I'm very, very enamored with transmedia storytelling. I think it is really the way for education and learning to go. And I hope in my presentation I'm able to tell you a little bit more about that. So actually, I really love my job very much. It's great being a social scientist to have so many interactions with so many different types of user groups. And I've been able to make games in the course of my career. I started out in games and actually doing social simulations and collaborative groupware systems in the early 2000s. And now, since 2010, I've been investigating transmedia storytelling, and in particular, transmedia learning. And actually, what I think that I do is I actually help other people tell their own stories. That is what a social scientist does. So I'm usually part of a development team. I might be a subject matter expert, or I work with subject matter experts to elicit what they are bringing to the table that they may not themselves really know how to explain. So my job is actually to be a professional listener and to be an interpreter. And so that's what I find really fascinating about what I do. So now I'd like to tell you why I do it that wasn't on that slide before. So why I do this is because I'm from the Republic of Panama, and I've lived through two dictators, and was actually also in Panama just before Operation Just Cause. That was the war. And so I was very affected by that, as was my family and community. And it was at that time that I really wanted to make a change. So I decided that getting into this role, actually the reason why I started working in software in any way, is because as a social scientist, I thought that it was important to have an advocate for users at the table. Because developers, we make assumptions, and I thought it was important to bring in other people's stories, bring their stories to the table in environments where they're not usually present. So that's why I got involved, and that's particularly now why I work for the military, because I really feel that my job is to change the way they train. And that is exactly what I've been trying to do since the early 2000s. I did it with games. Working with America's Army to create one of the first training games for the United States Army Special Forces. And now with transmedia, bringing that in, I'm trying to change the way they train again. Because I think that we train really well with games in the military, but we don't string those instances together. We don't create cohesive learning experiences yet. So, in other words, in games, the learner is the protagonist, but we don't do a good job of letting that learner be the protagonist across many different experiences. So then, as I talk about this, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the current climate or how where learners are today. And you'll find a lot of, I hope, a lot of synergy with or commonalities with the people that you are working with, whether it's your audience or whether they're learners. So this is the climate that we find ourselves today. We're really bombarded by media. We're bombarded by a lot of information. And so it's really up to the learners to make sense of it. This is a real tough task. If you think about it cognitively, we are responsible for synergizing all of that information. We're supposed to think across diverse experiences, and we're supposed to have it mean something greater than the sum of the parts. And so here, learning is happening everywhere, and that creates a really interesting opportunity for us now as, well, scientists, educators, and that is that we can now also collect really nice analytics to understand how to make those experiences better for learners. So this is in part of the research that I work on. Now, because my talk is about blended learning and informal learning, I kind of wanted to introduce a slide here that may be something you already know about, so forgive me if it's remedial for some of you. But when educators talk about blended learning or multimedia, I thought it's important to show you what they mean. So first, I think everybody understands that multimedia is like a little package. You can think of it as a package of content. It incorporates a lot of different media. And transmedia is very different. It incorporates multimedia, but it also incorporates other things that a multimedia experience may not. In particular, the use of story and the intent to evoke emotions. So this is remedial for all of you, but look at blended learning. So blended learning is a topic of interest now among the education community. And I've been asked before, what's the difference between transmedia learning and blended learning? Aren't they the same thing? Well, if you look at how blended learning is described in the literature, and I understand that blended learning is probably changing as we speak, but in the literature, it's described as being an instructor-led activity. And also, it can be formal or informal. So a lot of blended learning actually incorporates a classroom. So it's either incorporating online learning or some type of digital activity with formal classroom training or classroom learning, or some sort of combination. It can even be a flipped classroom. Maybe you've heard that term, where now instead of lectures in the classroom, the lectures are online outside of the classroom, but the activity and interaction takes place in the classroom. So this is a type of blended learning. But where I think that transmedia storytelling, as you know, and transmedia learning is different from blended learning, is that we have an intent to share a story or to have others share their stories. And that is a significant difference from an activity being instructor-led, which is really more kind of push of information. This is transmedia storytelling is eliciting information that people share together. So in the course of my work, in order to really hone in on this idea of learning with transmedia, I've worked up a definition, and I come out of the discipline of human communication. So when I look at interactions, I look at them from that point of view. And so for me, transmedia learning is really the scalable system of messages. And the reason why I introduced the idea of scale is because really we want to think about hundreds of thousands of people who are all sharing the story, participating in these large scale, could be an activity like an ARG, but participating in this sharing of information. And then, of course, what's also really important here is the idea that you're also evoking an emotion. So it's not just imparting information, like I'm doing right now, probably. It's really more the idea of using multiple media, using everything that you can. I like Paul's comment about using the tricks of all media to really involve someone personally in the story. And personal involvement is really important for me because, as in my job, all the learners should be protagonists. So that's something that is pretty core to what I'm doing. So another reason why transmedia is really good for education is because we spend about 95% of our time in our lifetime outside of the classroom. The time that we spend, quote unquote, learning in the classroom is actually quite small. So think about all of the rest of the time that we need to take advantage of, so that we can actually learn. So that's where the informal learning comes into play. And one of my favorite theories to really talk about transmedia and learning together is distributed cognition. And this is the notion that our cognition is actually distributed not only across people, but also across technology. So it can be an environment. Your cognition can reside in an environment. It can reside on different platforms, in your smartphone, and it also resides in other people. So we start to think of now a technology as a cognitive prosthetic, technologies that help you think and remember, like your smartphone. And we also think about distributed cognition as connecting your experience across physical and virtual worlds. So your cognition is something that really spans a lot of the different realities that Jury mentioned or brought up in his presentation with the eight realms of the metaverse. Yeah, and then I think another good important point here is that distributed cognition is really a social process. And so this really is key because what this suggests is that something really important may not reside inside of you. It might reside in maybe your team or in part of your environment. And the work that I do, this is really key, and I'm going to hopefully explain why. So I really like this quote. This is from Jeff Gomez. And in this quote here, what he's talking about is the fact that transmedia storytelling is really a conversation. And in fact, learning is a conversation. If you think about learning occurring across your lifetime, lifelong learning, then it's really a conversation. And when we build tools, or when I build tools to help people learn, whether it's a game or any type of other activity, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create something that's going to incite conversation. Conversation being something that occurs outside of whatever I produce that's going to continue and go on, and that that particular learner with others will co-create, take in different directions. I expect things to have a life of their own beyond what I can design. So these are some of the research questions that I have to think about, which is why I went into this, because it's really exciting to think about, you know, this idea of, okay, we've got all of this disparate knowledge. Well, how do we assess the efficacy of that? And, how do we know where people are acquiring all this information? And how can we use this technique to help people think on their feet better, to become more adaptive thinkers, to not be stymied when they encounter something new, right? To stretch their boundaries. And in particular, one of the research questions that's really been integral to my work as a game designer is in open-ended environments and in games that are free play and discovery, how can we foster this type of curiosity, free thinking, and get these emergent outcomes that are really geared for improving someone's performance? So now I'm going to try to enter into like a storytelling part of my presentation, because even though I help others tell their stories, I may not be particularly good at telling my own. So I work a lot with the military, as I said, and they are one of the largest militaries all over the world, actually. They are storytelling organizations. They tell a lot of stories. That's how they communicate informal knowledge to each other. And so this is an image, actually, of the National Training Center, which is located in Barstow, California, and it's way in the desert. And to get there, as you drive up a very long stretch of road where there is nothing but desert and sand on the two sides of the road, you finally arrive at this rock and with other boulders around it. And as you drive up, it's really quite impressive because you see it out in the distance, and it's small. And as you get closer and closer, it gets larger and larger and larger. And then as you approach it, you realize those are the insignia of all of the different units that have gone to this National Training Center. And so they are actually leaving their stories at that training center. And so when you go and when you enter into this environment, you realize, wow, there's a lot here, a lot of informal learning that occurs at this training center. And actually, the training center is to practice what I would call a graduate level a graduate level exercise. Basically, the units will go to the training center to practice live training. So it's like live action role play. What they're doing is they go to do several exercises that span several weeks, where they are actually practicing some of the skills that they may have learned in different, where, you know, back at their installations. Here they're practicing communication skills. And so this is actually demonstrating just a little bit of some of the work that I do because of the experience, how the Operation Just Cause impacted me and my experience. I wanted to help the military develop better cross-cultural communication skills. I wanted to help them understand how to use those skills in lieu of other types of approaches. So the scenarios, these operations, they're very story-driven. If they are doing a scenario training like this, they're going into the market, they have a story. They have a story that they are either, there's a backstory and there's a story that plays out. But the thing is that in designing this training, I have no control necessarily about what happens here. Or do I? So let's talk about that. Now this is the Simulation Experience Design Framework. I developed this back in 2007. Actually, the beginnings of it started in 1999, where I started talking about using this type of process to think about the ways that we design experiences, especially, I would say, free play experiences, where you're guiding the learner and not necessarily telling them what to do or giving them different options. So this is actually probably a good example of scenario-based narratives, or maybe even problem-based, where there's an ill-defined domain and they have to kind of navigate their way through it. So what I do is I start with the interaction. I start with looking at the learner and what the goals are of that particular situation. And also, though, what are the types of communication messages that I would like to see occur? So actually think about, what do I want the end user to do? What do I want the learner to do in terms of the interaction, the actual utterance? What is it that I hope to accomplish? So I think about it here, and the way that we build that is by using personas. I've used that technique a lot to think about the end user or the learner's experience, to understand what it is they're trying to, either a what someone who's doing the training might want to communicate. So we start there with looking at the roles and personas. And then what I do is I move into basically the narrative, which is, what's the core experience that I would like to guide the learner to have in this particular setting? So what are they trying to learn? And as I explained earlier, if I'm helping the military train their soldiers, in this case I'll use the Army as an example, to have better cross-cultural communication skills, then what we're really doing is we're really trying to hone someone's ethos. So it's really an ethos. It's not necessarily, yes, there are skills, there are general skills that they must know, but it's really more, I'm really more interested in, how can I create or incentivize someone to develop an ethos of carrying those skills with them and approaching every situation with this type of best practice of being basically, you know, human communication skills. So here what we do is I design scenarios then, thinking about, okay, in what situation could we elicit these types of interactions? So it turns out that for several interactions like rapport building, a market is a really good environment. It not only engages the learner, immerses them in the type of environment that they will discover when they're in theater, but also gives them an opportunity to practice the actual utterances or the communication that we'd like to have them utilize. Next is the core experience. And or in this case also prior experience. So this is place. And when we design a game, it can be the game level. So these are, what are the visual assets what does the environment look like? How can we create triggers with artifacts? And so there was a lot of discussion today about triggers, and we've been using triggers in terms of objects, artifacts around the environment that will elicit certain kinds of communication. And then finally, and this is the piece that is probably the most important, is the emergent culture. And this gets to the idea that in this situation, we're guiding people to have an experience, but we are expecting them to co-create it. We're expecting them to change it. And so as designers, we really have to just let go in that sense. And so what we have to think about, though, is what type of co-creation can we help induce so that it will reinforce their learning. And in the military, there's a term called an after-action review. And this is really assessment, it's feedback, but in a lot of military training, their style of blended learning is that following an activity or an event, there's a period of time where they all get together and they talk about it. And they share what they've learned together. And so this is actually key because everything that's happened before this moment is buildup. It's just buildup getting them here, because this, the emerging culture, is the most important part of what we're trying to accomplish. Because what we want them to do is have the background so that they can continue the conversation when they're together outside of the experience. Outside of whatever we've designed, we want them to, first of all, in that setting where they're sharing what they've learned, identify what kind of resources and skills there are distributed among their team, so that when they go somewhere else together, if one person doesn't have the right skill set, he or she knows who does. And this is also getting at that distributed cognition, knowing where the skills are so that they can function as a team together. So let's see. And again, the core, or what's motivating all of this, is intercultural communication, getting them to really think this through together. So there have been a lot of examples. Let me take that back. Not a lot, but there's some good ones. So I started out working with America's Army. I've collaborated with them. And I can tell you about that later if you like. We have some narrative-based examples where the U.S. Army has really experimented with motion graphics, taking very complex procedures and distilling them into, I would say, auxiliary information that you use alongside a game. So that before you go into a game environment to really play something out, maybe going through the motion graphic and getting an idea of what right looks like. And what we also did was have not only a digital graphic novel, but then parts of the panels. Some of the panels actually demonstrated in-game what they might be able to expect. So how much time do I have? Just want to check. I have 6 minutes for total? Or? Okay, so I'm going to play a little bit of this, a little bit of the next one, and what I want to do is give you an idea of motivation. So this is, I've done some work with this general who you'll see talking in in this video. We've worked together on a number of things, and I just want you to get an idea of the setting of their environment. He works with injured veterans, and we've done some things together. I'm going to show you some machinima after that, but let me just go ahead and just take like 30 seconds or so of this. So I wanted to bring this up because here you can see that in these seminars that General Jones leads at his camp, Outdoor Odyssey, the best, or I would say the number one thing, is to communicate to the participants that it's about genuine concern, that they are cared about. So it's a very, if you can imagine, it's a very human situation. And so when General Jones, I've been to this these seminars, by the way. He runs them also for disadvantaged youth. And they're really good. They're settings like this where everybody gets to talk about their experiences. And General Jones approached me about bringing in a game. He wanted to have an interactive experience where he felt that the game was going to be something that was going to help them open up a little bit more. And so after we did an analysis and talked about it, thought about it, I did my participant observation. What I came back with was, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, and given the your setting and just the computers you have and everything, the game is not going to be a good solution because the game is actually going to pull people away. Let's show how we can use machinima from a game to create a narrative that is going to incite some very honest conversation faster. So that's the next video here. And I did this with the Army Simulation Center. This is based on a real story, one of the battalions of the Marine Corps. It's unclassified. It's on YouTube. So this is the power of what you can do with games and to create a narrative that you can use in a setting like a classroom or elsewhere.
Worst case of combat stress I remember from our deployment was an IED that killed one of my Marines. Sergeant, a reliable source says there's an IED in the western sector of Rayo. Ready your squad for a foot patrol at once. Find that IED.
Yes, sir.
The squad leader led his patrol by putting his men in a good tactical formation and utilizing a V-sweep technique along the dirt road. They checked for all the usual signs for an IED and anyone that could be a triggerman. After sweeping the road and finding no IEDs for over a click, the squad leader put his men in a tactical column on the road and headed back to the cop. On the way back, an IED was initiated by an insurgent hiding in a field adjacent to the dirt road. One Marine was killed, five Marines and an interpreter were wounded, the rest were unscathed. After evacuating the wounded and loading up their friend's body, the squad just wasn't the same. Some of the Marines in the squad started taking their aggression out on the locals. Some of the wounded Marines began feeling survivors' guilt and had nightmares about the blast once they were back in the States. That's not all. Two of the other injured Marines got arrested for reckless driving. One even tried to evade police. Just another sign that mentally they were still having problems dealing with all of it. The squad leader, he almost lost his leg. Felt tremendous guilt for what had happened. When he confided this to me once we were back home, I made sure to tell him it wasn't his fault. I was the one who tasked him to clear the route of IEDs, so he shouldn't feel guilty about anything. I could tell that his decision not to V-sweep the route on the way back that day still bothered him 7 months later, and probably would for a lot longer.
So in 3 minutes, you know, if we had gameplay, it would have taken much longer. But in 3 minutes, we were able to create a story based from our game environment that they could use in conversation to spark other conversations. And so this was actually used in pre-deployment training. So training for young Marines or Marines to identify the signs of post-traumatic stress so that they could help each other when they're in theater. And so these are examples. That's an example of narrative-based, training. But here's problem-based. So actually, I don't want to spend too much time on this, except to say that we had a game environment that was, or an environment that was mocked up, a virtual environment of the camp, Outdoor Odyssey. And so what we did was we repurposed it for young children to, in this scenario, experience the Pacific Northwest and the people of Haida Gwaii and their problem of the salmon diminishing in that environment. And it's basically a systems problem where they have to figure out why are the salmon dying off. And so it's a virtual world where they go in and this you can basically see a little bit in the back here. That is the same cabin that you saw in the beginning video, in the first video. So this is repurposing General Jones's environment for a different type of study. I won't go into this, but it's in my presentation if you'd like to look at it. These are open source tools for how we were able to connect basically a game in a virtual environment with sensors in a real garden to span the physical and virtual, again trying to bring in a transmedia learning, connecting different modalities where you could, the garden actually, changes in the garden created changes in the virtual environment. And so, you know, these are our R&D challenges. In research and development, what we're thinking about is where do we take this next? So we haven't really figured out in education how to even bring in transmedia. I think that the first step is probably going to be in a lot of, like, formal learning instances. It'll be teachers and educators that will start to adopt these ideas. Or, you know, I'm encouraging you to talk to educators and convince them that transmedia storytelling is perfect for informal learning environments to augment the things that they're learning during the day in you know, their formal learning environments. And in order to measure this transmedia storytelling and its efficacy, we really have to start thinking about how we are going to track learning experiences. So we've developed some APIs for doing that that look at learner activity. And also, we need to start basically learning and a little bit more about the learning science and the science behind transmedia. At Advanced Distributed Learning in particular, we are very interested in persistent learner models and doing machine learning and applying this to intelligent transmedia ecosystems. So I'm hoping to be able to say more about that at some time. And just to conclude, when, you know, we think about transmedia learning, it's really about behavior change, and we've heard a lot about behavior change today, so this is really great. But it's also behavior change that's either physical or it can be intellectual, it can be a combination. And so when we're when we think about behavior change, we can look at it in all different areas. And we would like to scale training to thousands of individuals. Because actually the training that I just talked to you about, where it's small groups, co-located, it's not scalable. So we've got to think about ways to scale that. And again, synthesizing information across a lot of disparate either systems or groups, that is what's going to create more agile thinkers. So I'm hoping that from my presentation, I just want to make sure that I have two takeaways for you. Okay. So one is that interaction with media is really a buildup for that sustained conversation. And then also think about the learner as a protagonist. Because if we are going to sustain a conversation for those learners, it's got to be something that they are creating throughout their entire life. And with that, I thank you very much. Yes.
I'm interested in the PTSD Survivor Skills Project. What do you think was the advantage of having an animated setup for this? Mm-hmm. You could have done this in a classic documentary format.
Right.
Having people talk about their scenario.
That's an excellent question. So the military uses, they have an enterprise license for that particular game engine. So it's VBS. And so because they have the enterprise license and because basically the what we got was a narrative from a squad leader about a situation that had happened. And so I had to create basically the storyboards. I didn't have any actors. We didn't have the time or money to go out and interview the actual participants. So it was really more of an opportunity to relay the story, but to anonymize. And also to make it in such a way that with this I can change the language. It can be set up in different languages, or there are just certain advantages to doing it in a game environment. Also, think of it as if we look at it in terms of a connected learning experience, if they start with the narrative. So in the military, we talk a lot about crawl, walk, run. A crawl experience might be watching a video. and talking about the video. A walk experience is going into a game environment and playing out a scenario where you can experiment with what you would do under those circumstances. A run scenario is going to the National Training Center where you're there, and in real life you have to actually play it out in a live action role play. So that's how we think about it in terms of connecting experiences. Thank you for your question.
Crawl
on your hands and knees, like a baby crawls.
And why would that be talking about a video crawling?
Crawling, well, in terms of the fact that it's more like a lecture, or it's something simple. It's like if I were to do a tabletop exercise that's, you know, crawling, it's just not that complicated. I can bring it in. It's very flexible. I can use it in lots of different ways. It's the first thing. It's not the most complicated form of the idea. Okay. So first I want you to learn about the idea, maybe ask a few questions. Then I might want you to experience it in a controlled environment, and then I allow you to be it in an uncontrolled environment. Yeah.
One more question.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm interested in how in the training center, and I'm not sure if you have that experience yourself, the people who stand in for the characters
The role players.
The role players that aren't the protagonists.
Right.
What's their preparation like, and
Wow.
what's their agency?
That is a great question, because I forgot to cover that. Actually, at the National Training Center, all of the role players are from the particular country. They're brought in. They have, I think it's 1,700 role players for some of these big events that take place. They're huge productions when you think about it. And everybody, they are all speaking the target language. They're really being themselves in a sense. They have goals, training goals, that they are at the market, that they are making sure that others learn. It's an enormous program, and it's quite costly. Thank you for your great questions. Appreciate that.